So hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Deep Dive with Chris Spina and myself, Stephen.
Hi everyone.
So today we're talking about something that has been buzzing actually quite a bit.
Yes, yeah? What everybody's been talking about for more than a week now, DeepSeek. I like the way the Financial Times described it, Steve. A little-known Chinese hedge fund has thrown a grenade into the world of AI with a model that matches market leader OpenAI at a fraction of the cost.
Yeah, so basically what people are saying is like, wow, this stuff has come online and it's only like, let's say $5 for a bowl of noodles that I used to pay $15 for. And it tastes just as good, right? You're like, wow, exactly. Must be the MSG.
Okay, a bit like that, but a little bit more to it as well. I mean, I've been reading people are calling it a deep freakout.
Yep.
You know, all the tech folks were hyperventilating when they saw it. The major tech stocks took a nosedive, right, for a while, and then they came back up. And then there are all sorts of questions. Who are these people who created this model, right? What does it mean for the AI race, and what does it mean for us?
Yeah, so there's Singapore. So much deep thought into this. So we're going to do a deep dive, since it's called DeepSeek. Your first reaction when you heard about DeepSeek, I mean, there have been many other AIs that are around, that have been on the market. They come out every day, but none have made so much noise as DeepSeek has. Why?
Maybe I start off with a couple of observations.
Okay.
First of all, DeepSeek version 3. It's version 3.
Yep.
They have been at this for a while. Second is...
when was version 1 and 2?
Version 1 and 2 was, I think they started in 21, 22.
Okay. So it came out, but nobody
heard
about it.
And actually, to be honest, version 3 came out before Christmas. Nobody cared. We can talk about why, but I think it's good to understand what is the facts to some extent.
What are the
facts? Right? So the facts, the first fact is in AI, there's a lot of innovation. And this is just another innovation in a whole string of innovations. And if you look at data, we know this is true because you look at the number of papers published on AI, for example, it's like an exponential curve, right? Many of us in the field have said there's so much rapid change and innovation here.
Okay.
But actually, my real test is just look at ChatGPT. If you use ChatGPT or even DeepSeek today and you used it 6 months ago, it's not the same. So we see...
Much better.
It's improving a lot. And DeepSeek is not... It's part of the story. It's not unique. It's
but
not
why unique. Did yeah. it, yeah. you yeah. know, but before, such okay. a ripple?
So why?
Sorry, we're impatient that way.
No.
Why? Why? Just tell us why.
Okay, so why was... I think the three things that DeepSeek did. So the first is they had certain techniques that improved the use of the GPU. The second is the model itself is very efficient to use. And the third is the training to make it reason well and to make it transparent in the reasoning. Mm. That's the R1 model, right?
Yeah.
So these are facts. These are real. Mm. It made it cheaper. It shows that you could make the performance better. Mm. It's more transparent.
Mm.
Yeah.
What did it... Why does it have such a big impact? Well, before this, the view was only people with hundred thousands of GPUs. Not 10,000, but hundred thousands of GPUs.
And hundreds of millions of dollars.
Billions of dollars. Could do it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And here we have an example that shows it's not needed.
Mm. Okay.
And to be honest, many people in the field probably knew this beforehand.
Right.
Because... maybe, again, what's different about AI innovation? Most of AI innovation is software.
Mm. Yep.
But when you have millions of people trying different things, you get that organic innovation, right, happening. And maybe people feel shit in Hugging Face.
Do you agree with that? Is that true? And why were they able to do it like so much cheaper?
A year and a half ago, I was talking to some friends in Beijing. And after DeepSeek came out, we spent like a whole... weekend, the five of us talking in a group like nonstop for like 24 hours a day.
Okay, wow.
Because we're testing that.
You and all the tech guys on Reddit.
Yeah, I'm a geek. So a year and a half ago, one of them told me that he said, I mean, somebody in China will eventually figure out how to do this cheaply. And he said it will not be one of the venture invested ones. Because the venture invested ones, they will feel the pressure to deliver the metrics that investors are asking for. So it doesn't give them enough leeway and time to figure out how to do the incremental innovation needed.
Mm.
But I think at that time, that guy was saying that he thought most likely the person or the organization which will figure this out would be one of the crypto miners because they had lots of GPUs.
Okay.
And crypto mining is banned in China. So they have to deploy elsewhere, but he didn't expect that to be DeepSeek.
So not entirely new to it. Anyway, for those of you in the industry, to find someone who's doing it so much cheaper and just as effective.
Cheaper. This trend will continue. Hmm. Today is DeepSeek.
We tomorrow will wait for somebody else.
Llama 4, you know, they're going to stop Llama
4. But that makes sense, right? Yeah. Technology should always get better.
It does. So, okay, so what you're saying, Leslie, is that it was just a matter of time before somebody did it. It just happened that DeepSeek did it before anyone else.
Yes. And also, we have narratives that were punctured because of this.
That's right. That you needed a lot of money, deep pockets, venture money, etc.
The confluence of geopolitics, because again, it's like chip ban couldn't make this possible. So you had narratives, people saying, how did this become possible? They must have used chips that they were not allowed to use, right?
That's right.
But the truth is, when you stop people from doing something, they innovate. In a way, they did innovate.
So did they use these NVIDIA chips?
We don't know, but certainly they used what was legal. And they made what was legal very efficient.
Yep.
And they did it because they couldn't use the lesser, bigger
most
chips.
Isn't it funny? It's almost like because you're broke and because you only have this box of tools to work with, you just make it work with what you have, right?
Necessity is the mother of innovation. Right? Actually, to Jiankan's point, he would know this, this group were quants, right? Their origins was in, maybe they were not directly crypto, but they were quant hedge funds. Yes, who had an incentive to reprogram the chips to be more efficient.
Yeah.
And also, I think these guys are very good at sensing what's out there, what kind of information would cause what kind of effect. So I do think that knowledge will probably help them propagate the knowledge. I mean, the timing of all these releases and stuff.
So a bit of marketing, you mean?
I think they know how the market will react to certain news, and I wouldn't say manipulate, but I think they certainly leveraged all this buzz in the media very well.
Somebody was actually saying that it's not just a complete coincidence, that there's some of that, but we don't know. But I mean, one thing that some observers have said, the Chinese are not, it's not new for the Chinese to make things which are cheap and good. I mean, you talk about cars, talk about batteries, talk about vacuum cleaners, a whole bunch of it. So in a sense, that's in their DNA, right? Would you agree?
Kai-Fu Lee, right? A long time ago, he wrote a book, well, what seems like a long time ago, right? Where in the book, he observes that innovation in the US in AI will be at the frontier in theory, right?
Yeah.
Theory. In China, the innovation will be driven by lots of data and lots of experimentation. Mm. And in a way, this is...
That's come true.
Yes, that's what's happening right now, right? Mm. And in a way, that's... what broadly is how many things moves in tech, right? You have the stepwise like new idea, like a transformer.
Okay.
That's from 2018. Mm. It still powers most of. Then you have the constant like little bit, push down. Mm. And that comes from many, many people trying many things.
Yeah.
The scale of China.
You would imagine that 2 years since ChatGPT first came out was all the buzz, right?
Yeah.
You would have lots of people trying different things.
Exactly.
And all my friends, actually, when ChatGPT came out, the first version in, I think, November 2022.
Yes, that's right.
Within a week, I know at least 3 or 4 companies of my friends. They have completely pivoted from their existing business models. They said, okay, there's no way our existing business model will work.
It's gonna work.
We take the remaining money we've raised from investors, we try new things. And we amplify, we multiply that by, I don't know, hundreds of companies, hundreds of teams. And of course, someone's going to figure out.
I mean, it's a bit of a race, like an arms race. It's an AI race. Who gets out first, right? In a way, have they sort of set a new benchmark? Because by coming out and saying, hey, it's this cheap. Now, the next time an investor goes to a company, I'm not going to give you $50 million when I know some guy did it for $5 million.
Investors are very anxious because previously, I mean, the thing about AI is that, when you invest in a company, how do you value this company? Yes. When this company continues to need more money.
Okay.
You can't use the same metric of how many users you have or how much revenue you're generating. Mm. It just doesn't work that way.
Yeah, because of how fast it's moving.
Yeah.
You know, it's a whole topic in itself, but like, where do you make money, right?
Because
if you are the shovel provider like NVIDIA, you don't really care. More people use it.
Yeah.
But if you're a model builder, the challenge for you is your models are, if you try to create a mode by being closed, like OpenAI or Anthropic, then you have these open models that are roughly free. How do you charge for your model, right?
Yeah. That's what we were going to come to, because this is the proprietary.
Yep.
That means I'm building something and I charge you for it, right? $200 or whatever for you to use. And then there's this open stuff, which I can, maybe my own engineers twinkle a toodle around with it and then come up with their own product, customize it to my needs, right? That's a huge difference, isn't it?
So one answer is... you actually cannot make money from these models. They are commodities.
Right.
Mm.
Right. So, sorry to say, like, it takes billions of dollars for a front leader to show it's possible.
Okay.
Then the rest of us will just follow.
That's right.
And make it very cheap, right? Yes. And so, that's not where the moat is. So, there are investors.
So, where's the moat? How are they going to make money?
So, many people say, okay, one strategy is... invest in the shovels, right? The people who make the shovels. The other is the people who make the applications, right? They control the data. They control the use case. They know the customer. Mm. They can make the money.
Mm.
Okay.
But in a way, do you see that OpenAI now...
it's trying to do that too.
I mean, it has application,
Because they have built... Remember in the early days, they would say, like, we are not going to compete with you.
Yeah.
You build the application and we are just here for you to use.
So why would I invest in, if I'm a company, in OpenAI products if I could just use someone like DeepSeek, you know, which has its innards on the outside, so to speak, right?
Yeah, would you put your money in there?
Because now they're selling their products, you know, for enterprise users, for personal use, etc. Yeah. Why would I pay for that much of money?
All my friends, the ones who still have customers outside China, where they are physically inside China, they still use OpenAI for enterprise applications, because at the end of the day, I mean, DeepSeek is still very new. It's not stable, even for enterprise usage. So they can't put full trust on that yet. But this might flip. We don't know yet.
That's just a matter of time, right? I mean,
Possibly, but there are other complications,
right? Yeah.
In open source, we have... so actually, the most... widely used operating software in the world is arguably open source.
Okay.
Right? It's Linux, which is, you know, Mac is part of it, Android is part of it. But Linux has actually an enterprise version for which people will pay even though it's open source, right? Yeah. So there are models, like in many things that we use, the underlying technology may be open source, but when it comes to a business or government, you pay somebody to make it more safe, more supported. Yep. So that's another model. The second level is that you can download these models, but it takes a bit to set it up. And so people, even if you're a developer, instead of downloading it and it's free, you don't mind paying somebody to give
set it up for you.
And that's called an API.
To make your life easier. Say, I want to do this, but you help me get there by figuring out the whole thing in between.
And just to also add complications, even like DeepSeek, there are three ways at least I can use DeepSeek. I can call the DeepSeek API that's going to China.
Okay.
Right? So that's one. Then there are these services like Amazon or others who have, or Huawei Cloud has put it on their system.
Yeah.
Then I can use that, right? Yeah. And lastly, I can do it myself. All have different costs and implications.
Okay.
Do you think that OpenAI, I mean, is used by enterprises more because it has this time advantage, right? It was forced to reckon with enterprise customers earlier.
Yes.
So that's why they have built this system earlier.
Yes. Yeah, it's like a first mover advantage, right?
Right.
And all the data they've gathered, you know, to make their systems stronger.
A bit better. But also don't underestimate this, right? For businesses, for we as users or even people at, who are a developer, we want all the extra frills, right? Like more power, more. Sounds good. But for enterprise, wants predictability
and
consistency. Right? And so what OpenAI... So it might be like this. Five people build a model. To service an enterprise, you need 200 people.
Right. Okay. That's
so
true.
So you can imagine the difference here, right? Again, DeepSeek, 20 people reportedly.
That's
now,
right.
If they want to build a business, suddenly they have to build this organization.
Exactly. They can't use their interns and their PhD students anymore.
And the companies will not trust them, right?
Yeah.
Their profiles, CVs and stuff. Yeah.
The question is, If we know that DeepSeek has certain biases for China, we may know that ChatGPT has certain biases for the US. Then it's just like watching Fox News or CNN. You know that they both are biased different parties, right? Political parties.
So I think at least for me, I observe this as a fact, and we should know it.
Yeah.
I guess I don't get upset that this is happening.
So today, when I was doing some work, and I had had a few AI tools open at the same time, I have Grok. So I think lots of people have lots of opinions about Grok.
Okay.
I mean, the Elon Musk ex-affiliated chatbot.
Elon Musk is a whole different podcast.
We can spend a lifetime talking about it.
So Grok represents the other...
Oh, so the anti-woke kind of...
Yeah.
So basically, I have Grok.
They're not woke, they're asleep.
I didn't know that it opens a different discussion. I try that with different things, and sometimes if we give them the same task, we can clearly see that, how the different models are trained differently. So for instance, I was asking the models to draw me a picture of a politician with a business figure. I will not name which ones.
Okay.
Because we tried to create a sort of a poster for something. And ChatGPT would tell me that, okay, because our content policy, we can't do it. And DeepSeek would say that I don't draw pictures now. Grok gave me four versions saying that which one do you like. I look at the four versions. I said, okay, there's no way I'm going to post any of them or any of my social media.
Okay. Very inappropriate.
It can be interpreted in very negative ways. As you can see that, I mean, all these models are biased in different ways.
Mm.
I would consider myself a relatively informed user. So I check different things before I actually use it. I do think that policymakers would probably be even in a better position, right? And then look at different possibilities out there. They look at the biases, and they can make an informed decision.
Because we all have biases as human beings.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
That's inherent. So, I mean, we tell people, too, that when you look at the media, don't just read one source. Read several news agencies and get a sense of the story, because everybody will tell the story a little bit differently.
But I'm afraid that most people are not like him, you know? They're not having five different ChatGPTs open. I'm telling you, the kid in university who's using ChatGPTs to write his essays is just going to pick whatever it gives him.
But that's maybe a separate point, but this is why we need to help people understand how to use these AI models. And actually, Steve's point is really important. Mm. You need to know the weaknesses and the strengths.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And don't believe that this thing is perfect.
That's right.
It's not.
Take it for what it says it is.
It's very powerful. It's great. I'm a big fan, but it's not perfect.
Depending on how you prompt it, you can kind of get the results you want too. So,
I mean, it's getting better today, but the used to be fun thing to do is it gives you an answer and you say, I think you're wrong. And then the whole answer changes.
I see what you mean. Let me rethink it. And then it gives you another answer.
That's right.
Different AIs nowadays have sort of different sort of trade, because if someone gives me a piece of work, I can clearly tell that which AI helped that person write it.
Seriously?
Yeah. I mean, once you are exposed to that long enough, you see some patterns.
And that's why sometimes when we use models, we also know, okay, they used GPT-4 to train this, because it starts to sound like
We need to be
the personality, the voice of the AI.
Interesting.
Yeah, it does make sense.
We can't talk about this without talking about how it will impact us, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of jobs, professionally, for example, we're all deep into this. You know, every company I know is experimenting. How is it making your work more efficient? How can you do things better? And some people are saying it's even displacing some very junior level jobs, which ChatGPT can do. How worried are you on a scale of 1 to 10?
2?
2, worried. Okay,
not
worried. Let's
see.
I'm at 10.
Yeah, 10, you're worried. Okay, now tell us why.
Okay. 2, I think Leslie kind of answered my question, right? Because... I mean, if you are people like Leslie who worry that at the level of 10, then I don't have to worry as a casual user. But
no, we won't let you get away with that answer. You have to tell. Okay, so you're optimistic that humans will adapt?
I'm optimistic for the long term. I'm a little bit cautious about the short term, because I do see that, when ChatGPT came out, when Midjourney came out, I do see at least some of my friends, gaming studios started laying off people. Because graphic design and certain functions, they could do it more efficiently, and they need fewer people. Mm. And we can always say that, okay, the skills can be retrained, it will open new opportunities, but there's always a gap between the time that jobs get displaced versus the time that, okay, new jobs get created. And it's painful for people, especially people who have been trained as a specialist. And if their jobs are at risk, it's much, much harder for that to be replaced, right?
Okay. But you're still confident that overall humans will prevail? I mean, it's not going to really take away.
I'm kind of technology sort of optimist. And I look at global warming. I don't like it, but I'm not terribly worried about it. I'm hoping that someone would find a technology solution
to will help it. Yeah.
To solve it.
I'm not worried because I'll be dead by then. So I figured.
Amen to that. Okay, what about you? Why are you so worried?
It's actually same point as Jiangkan. Technology is generally a positive thing. Economists are really positive about it. But this speed is very fast.
Yeah.
So it's a timing problem. And for me, it's good to be at 10 because I want to make sure the technology is used for human good.
Yeah.
But the profit motive is, you know,
policymakers
will say AI is to augment, not replace.
Mm. Mm.
Unfortunately, the profit motive is, what are you talking about? Let's be truthful about this.
That's right.
It's to replace.
Yeah, Absolutely.
And so, and this is happening so fast, right? Our systems cannot. I am worried we can't absorb this, actually.
Mm.
So it's better to be more alarmist in that situation than to say it's okay.
So in other words, then we'll be forced to figure out how to protect the transition, you were saying, right?
I think the transition is important. Remember, remember the, you know, people say the Industrial Revolution was a good thing.
Yeah.
Yes, it was. But two generations of workers suffered before the good thing happened.
Yeah, change is always hard. But at the same time, you could look at it that what has happened has forced us to think again. So we were kind of, ChatGPT came out, and then after a while, we're all kind of like, okay. Then suddenly another, hello, wake up again.
Which
you know?
Is actually the broader message, right?
Yeah.
The prices come down, it's be even easier to use.
Yeah.
Even more innovations will happen.
That's right.
And we have to move faster.
Right.
Unfortunately, it's not easy because technology is moving faster than society can figure this out.
And can meet it. Yeah, I'm glad, Steve,
I
learned how to write when none of this was happening.
Oh,
right?
but now you don't need to write that well because you can cheat. You can use.
but then now all this becomes augmentation tools for you. But for people who are fresh out of university, they might not have that opportunity to train for that.
So the challenge is that I observe many of us like good coder. You know what's good coding, and the GPT or you know Claude is really good at it. Makes you a better coder, faster, more productive.
Right.
But the problem is you learn through hard. You have an instinct, you learn, right? Mm. The younger junior coder never gets a chance now because I'm not going to use a junior coder. I'm using ChatGPT, right?
Or Claude.
So you don't get a chance to practice, right? How will you become a master coder?
Well, let's not be too pessimistic. The answer will be, the answer will be actually the AI can help you become that, right?
You can become a master faster.
But the profit motive may not. So it's not that we don't know how to solve it, but the profit motive may not be there to do it.
Right.
As a business, I have no interest in doing this.
The poor junior coder is not going to get a job.
And
you
also, as a business, as someone who runs a business, I mean, you have this fear, right? If my competitors uses this to improve their productivity, I'm forced to react.
You don't have the luxury. Yeah. Even if you wanted, you don't have the luxury.
So everyone is forced to just do things faster and be more reactive, which means, like all the tech companies, you hire all of a sudden, then you fire again, and then 6 months later, you hire again, you keep, you know.
I don't think we have that many big, you know, headlines, at least in Singapore, but, you know, I'm beginning to hear stories about like junior coders, you know, web designers, moderators, content moderators.
Voice-over artists, that's what I'm hearing.
Oh. Well, I mean,
podcasts, right? Sorry to say this,
LLM.
Don't be sorry.
They can be fully, yes, we've heard of that.
We can do something else, right, Steve?
Yeah. Well,
not the same.
I rather sell my voice and then they can put whatever. You know, oh at least God. I have royalties forever and royalties when I retire. Yeah. You know, that's a better. So, do you like my voice? Think like, you know. Okay.
Anyway, the story is far from over, right? The race is going to become intense. So, I guess buckle up, everybody.
That's right. We're in for a long and could be pretty bumpy ride.
That's right.
Thanks, guys, for coming in, sharing your insights with us. Thanks to all of you who have been joining us. Leave us your comments. Let us know what you think. This is one topic that is going to be hanging over our heads for, I think, the next few months and years to come.
Okay, this podcast has a very capable human team behind it, thankfully.
Yeah, but I think some of them use AI to also come up with our...
Tiffany Ang, Sai Ye-Win, Junaini Johari, Joanne Chan, and Hanida Amin. Thank you and see you next week.
See ya.